This is Strange Harbor. Ghosts, UFOs, aliens, Sasquatch, and all things strange.
This pilot, though, who flew Barack Obama during his 2008 presidential campaign, says UFOs are real, and he's seen one firsthand.
An unidentified object seen over the sky above the Rosedale area.
The shot today video that's got all of Texas talking, probably the whole country, from iReporter, who shot this on a cell phone near Stephenville, Texas. The UFO, according to witnesses, and the witnesses include local police and other public figures.
When several dozen residents looked up and saw a UFO more than once.
Three very mysterious shiny lights over Breckenridge have police and residents puzzled.
Tonight we have never before seen videotape of UFOs over Colorado.
If you noticed strange lights in the sky over the weekend, you aren't alone. KCTV5's Alan Schoaf went to Lee's Summit to get to the bottom of more than a dozen UFO sightings.
Never before seen footage of UFO sightings this year are being shown at a conference in Pontefract.
Local police never definitively said who's to blame. Locals say it has to be something out of this world.
I'm taking a random picture, zoomed in, and there it was. There was a UFO.
Strange Harbor, ghosts, UFOs, aliens, Sasquatch, all things strange.
And another exciting episode of Strange Harbor, where we talk about the weird,
the strange, the unabated, and the unruffled.
Johnny and Billy here. We talk strange topics, UFOs, Sasquatch, near-death ghosts, all sorts of things, and every so often we actually get a credible guest to join us. And today, welcome back Maureen Morgan, the state director of MUFON here in Washington. Is that correct?
That is correct.
You know, after 500 times, you'd figure I'd finally get it right.
Well, fortunately, there's only one, so yes.
How have you been?
I have been well. You know, we're always busy. We have a lot of sightings and whatever coming in, and and we have a big, the International MUFON International Symposium is coming up in Long Beach next week, so it's going to be, I'm leaving on Wednesday to go down and to go to field investigators workshops, state directors workshops, and to hear all these wonderful speakers talking about all sorts of wonderful topics. So yes, lots of exciting things coming up.
Now, is that MUFON conference, is that open to anybody, or is it just
absolutely.
For oh okay
it's not too late to get a ticket.
How would a person get tickets to that?
Just go on to the MUFON online MUFON site, prominently displayed. You could still get tickets. Of course, the problem would be getting a flight down there. If you're not already in California, it could be expensive.
Right. Have you been to any of the recent conferences? I heard that there was a couple biggies in the last couple months.
Well, I've only been to, other than the fantastic Ocean Shores UFO Symposium.
Oh, go on.
I've been to the McMinnville UFO Fest in May, which of course is always fabulous, and this one was probably, and this is, what is that, their 20th anniversary? It was a big deal.
Yeah.
And they featured some extraordinary presenters, like David Fravor, the pilot of the fighter jet that got the gun camera footage of the Tic Tac video.
Ooh.
And George Knapp, of course, who's always good. He's a investigative reporter from a TV station in Las Vegas, who's very involved in the world of the anomalous phenomena, just leave that at that.
Mm-hmm.
And also Bob Lazar, who has been a very controversial figure in ufology for many years. He purportedly was involved in top secret projects at both Area 51 and at Los Alamos. And then when apparently he was talking too much to friends, he was made to be non-existent. I mean, his records were cleaned. His college records disappeared, and for the last two decades, there's been this big controversy. Is he the real deal or not? And he certainly impressed me as the real deal, because there was enough little things that couldn't be cleansed, like his being mentioned in newspaper articles or being in the Los Alamos telephone directory, which apparently had things, little things like that, that had been overlooked.
Wow.
But, yes, he seemed very credible to me, and if this is indeed the case, that basically he was cleansed out of existence, that's really kind of a frightening thing.
Well, if he was cleansed out of existence, how was he at the conference?
I mean, he wasn't terminated. He's just at his whole story about having been a physicist and engineer at Area 51 and Los Alamos were wiped out,
oh,
as well as his college record at MIT.
Wow.
You know, so that all the background information about him was basically cleansed. So, I mean, he's still very much alive and very credible. And anyway, he was a very impressive speaker. So the lineup at McMinnville was very impressive this year.
What do you think about that military installing UFO trackers on their ships and planes and whatnot?
The whole thing about this revelation that came out recently about the U.S. Navy now drafting guidelines for pilots and other military personnel to submit event reports.
Mm-hmm.
After supposed decades of poo-pooing this as sci-fi and stories about little green men,
mm-hmm,
doesn't make sense to me at all. Because anybody who knows anything about the history of UFOs is aware of the some 10,000 reports of Foo Fighters during World War II all around the world.
Right.
And they were, many of the top leaders. Like George C. Marshall, for example, just came right out and said, hey, this is real. They're out there. We need to study this. And then you have the incursions over Hanford, where, in 1944 and early 1945, where a number of objects, including these big red pulsating fireballs, would hover over Hanford before the bombs were dropped on Japan. And this is where they were enriching plutonium for the bombs that were dropped on Japan. And when these objects would be picked up either visually or on radar over Hanford, they would deploy fighter pilots from the Pasco Naval Air Base to go out and intercept these things. And, of course, they would just go poof, and they were gone.
Hmm.
But one time, pilots, and again, these were experienced World War II fighter pilots, came back and reported that the object they saw over Hanford was the size of three aircraft carriers side by side. And then, of course, you had, the flap over Washington, D.C. in 52. You had all the nuclear weapons being shut down at Malmstrom Air Force Base in, the 1960s, and on and on and on and on. There have been so many instances where these objects, whatever they are, clearly could have been perceived as a threat to national security. The very idea that this stuff wasn't being taken seriously by the military is laughable.
Mm-hmm.
And not only that, but the Navy comes out with these supposed new guidelines in 2019, and this tic-tac video that went viral that was taken by the Navy pilots,
mm-hmm,
of this object that they were in pursuit of that basically made fools of them, was it 2004? And you think 14 years have lapsed since these events have taken place? So, I mean, this whole idea that the military has not been taking this phenomenon seriously is laughable, literally. And if they weren't taking Navy pilots or military pilots' cases seriously, it's probably because they didn't need to. They have other sources of information. And this is probably just a way to shut these belly-aching pilots up, who want to be taken seriously.
Right.
So anyway, there's so much going on that it just makes your head spin trying to wrap it around, what makes absolutely no sense.
Now, you just rattled off some things, some UFO incidents,
uh-huh,
in history. Now, you did a presentation at the UFO Summit on...
I did indeed.
Kind of like way, way back in time.
Well, that's right. And so, the fact that there were some 10,000 Foo Fighter reports made during World War II, not only over Germany and Europe, but over North Africa, throughout the Pacific Theater, over Sumatra, over Japan, and it was a global phenomenon. And it was taken very seriously, by our leaders. And to think that, and they had to have considered a threat to national security, because they were basically just, you know, just running circles around this, you know, the state-of-the-art aircraft at that time.
Yeah.
The history of UFOs in modern times certainly goes back to the 1940s. And then that's not even taken in, you know, the battle over Los Angeles in, I think, what was it, 1941 or 42?
Is that the one where there's that picture with all those spotlights on that UFO?
Yes, an object that hovered over Los Angeles. It was, he got a full military return, and they spent like 1,500 shells, and the object just sort of went drifting off. It was not impacted. But several people on the ground died. Several buildings caught on fire. Any damage that was done to, like, property or people that were on the ground from all the shrapnel coming down.
Wow.
The object seemed to be unfazed.
Wow. And they like to say that that's our military with the super-duper-duper technology that they don't let anybody know about, that super top secret.
A lot of that may be the case now. But it certainly was not the case in the 1940s, 50s, or 60s.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I, who knows, you know, what kind of back engineering might have taken place so that, you know, and when black ops craft objects may have been seen in the sky or experienced that was ours. But it seems highly unlikely that during the 1940s and 50s and 60s we were so advanced as to produce the kinds of objects that were being reported. And certainly in the mid-1940s, we certainly weren't able to develop aircraft or some kind of object in the sky that was the size of three aircraft carriers side by side. And, of course, this was all picked up on radar.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. And then, of course, if you start going into ancient art, UFOs and ETs in ancient art, which I've also done presentations for, on and at ocean shores, and then you see that this is a phenomenon that has gone back tens of thousands of years.
I've only seen like a painting here or there, a really old painting where there'll be some kind of blob in the sky, and you know, someone would point out, yeah, that's a UFO right there.
It's far more detailed than that.
Yeah,
a lot of the petroglyphs and cave paintings that go back 10, 15,000 years, very detailed images of what appear to be like suited astronauts.
Wow.
You know, you think now, in the meanwhile, the artists were depicting themselves as, say, like, you know, stick figures, and yet depicting these beings in this cave art as, like, fully clothed astronaut figures.
Mm-hmm.
You know, where would they even, not only that, but at times seated in seats. You know, you think, well, not only, how would they even have the conception of clothing when they had no clothing themselves? And when they probably squatted, how would they even conceive of these astronaut-suited beings seated in Star Trek-type chairs? It must be something that they saw on a craft. I mean, otherwise, how do you explain it?
Do you think there was a connection with, like, Roswell and the crash and the recovery, and then all of a sudden our technology kind of advancing, it seems like?
I think it's a number of things. You know, there was a UFO retrieval in Cape Girardeau, Missouri. God, that was sometime in the early 1940s. So I think it started, the craft retrieval started a lot earlier. And then you have to wonder what was going on. You know, were they really being brought down by us, or were they deliberately seeding the technology? So it leaves a lot of questions out there as to what was really going on.
Yeah, I just read a story how, like, the president had disguised himself, and I don't know if it was one of his security guys or another, like, of his cabinet, as reporters to go because they wanted to see firsthand. I don't know how true that is, but, you know, it's just one of those things that you come across, right?
I've heard stories, say, about President Carter, who, of course, had a sighting.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
With a number of other of his fellow golfers before he became president. And he made a vow that if he was elected, he'd get behind this UFO thing.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, he gets into office, and it appears that he was promptly told that you don't have a need to know.
Mm-hmm.
But somebody that was close to him later reported that in a briefing he did receive, that Carter basically put his head down and wept. And I mean, you can conjecture all you want as to what was behind that, but it would certainly suggest that whatever it was that he was told was extremely distressing. It could have been just he was told he didn't have a need to know.
Right.
Which could have been distressing too. But it would certainly suggest it was more than that. So much more to the story.
Yeah.
Then there are so many. It's like an onion. You know, as soon as you take off that first layer and you think you're getting something, then the next layer appears. And then you realize there's another and another and another and another. And I'm not sure if we're ever going to get behind it.
Has the military or any kind of government agency ever contacted you or like MUFON trying to get more information or even just to see what you know?
Well, they certainly haven't contacted me, and there's nobody. You know, it's hard to know who, you know, if they have in any way contacted MUFON or any of the, you know, the executive director or anybody in it. I don't know.
Yeah.
I do know that they certainly have not contacted me, and I have no reason to believe they've contacted James Clarkson, my predecessor, the previous Washington MUFON state director. But we all acknowledge that in the position, since we are convinced that this is a very real phenomenon, that everything we do in our positions, particularly as state director, everything that we do is being monitored. You know, every keystroke, every website we go on, every telephone call, and it would be even possible that every conversation, you know, it could very, and I'm not being paranoid or anything like that, but if UFOs are real and are perceived as a national threat, you know, we're on the front lines, you know, we just have to assume that the surveillance is going on. That doesn't mean we change anything. You know, there's probably websites I shouldn't go on and things I shouldn't say. But, I mean, you just have to live on. You can't go around like, you know, a scared rabbit.
So there's been some evidence that these UFOs have been coming here for maybe hundreds of years, maybe even thousands.
Correct.
If they're such a threat, why haven't they done anything yet?
See, now that's my argument. And recently, if you've been reading the major media reports on this whole UFO phenomenon, for example, the newspaper article that came, the front page article that came out in the New York Times in December of 2017, where they revealed that the Pentagon had been investigating UFOs through a program called, was it the Advanced Aerial Space Threat Investigation Program? But every program they have includes the word threat.
Yeah.
And it makes me wonder, as you just asked, you know, if is it tens of thousands, if not you know, millions of years, why are they suddenly a threat now?
Right.
And it makes you wonder if it isn't all part of this new, you know, basically weaponizing space. And you may be familiar with Trump's statement a few months ago when he came out and declared space as a warfighting domain and we need the space a space force. Yet to me, this indicates that, yeah, there's more trillions to go into not only the defense budget, but also probably into black ops. And it might even be an opportunity if they can convince the public that there is somehow a war going on out in space, that they can bring, this is just pure speculation on my part. And again, for the most part, I'm speaking for me and not as a state director. You know, they could very well have advanced technology out there that they're just aching to bring out and show to the public. You know, you can do that if suddenly, you know, we have a threat from these beings out there, these others, and we need to defend ourselves. There's a lot of things that raise red flags to me.
Or maybe it's just that there are billions of dollars of profit in it for the corporations involved in building all these space weapons.
And you have to keep in mind, too, you may be familiar with these audits of the Defense Department. I mean, they're completely legitimate, that show that there's $21 trillion missing from the Defense Department's budget. And you just, can you imagine what you could do with that kind of money in a black world where there's no accountability? You could get the best brains in the world working on super technology that you could never do in the white world. I mean, just it boggles my mind. And there could very well be secret space programs. You know, we could have already bases on the moon, whatever. I mean, $21 trillion is a lot of money to be missing. Where'd it go? I mean, is there accounting that bad? And it would seem to me, if their accounting procedures is that bad, we need to revamp how the military, the Department of Defense, accounts for the monies allocated to them. I mean, and this is only the money that we know about, let alone anything else that might be coming through, you know, drug trafficking and other illegitimate sources, which the intelligence establishment has been accused of in the past. So, yeah, it makes you wonder what's really going on out there. And this whole thing with all the stuff coming out in the media recently about new Navy guidelines, and the New York Post recently coming out saying that the Department of Defense has verified that they have this program to investigate UFOs or UAPs. And I just wonder if this isn't smoke and mirrors would be a good way to put it. You know, that there's enough stuff coming out about UFOs that get everybody over on this path when actually things are going on over on the other side, out of view. So get everybody distracted over here so they're not going to look over there. When the New York Times came out with their story in December 2017, when they came out and said that there was a Pentagon program that secretly studied UFOs, that basically brought it out into the open so all the other media then could take this issue seriously. And, of course, it also had that accompanying tic-tac gun camera footage showing the fighter pilots in pursuit of this unknown tic-tac-shaped object in the sky. You know, of course, what they don't often talk about is that the reason they were out there, these objects were being seen, I mean, for days on end, and the pilots report there's a whole fleet of them. So there wasn't just one object, there was a whole fleet of them out there. After that New York Times article came out, the tic-tac video continued to go viral and be talked about, but the information in the article itself just went kind of dormant until a few months ago when, again, it was, I think it was the online journal Politico came out with the story about the Navy now drafting new reporting guidelines for pilot and other personnel. And then the Washington Post just recently came out with the story from the Department of Defense verifying that, yes, indeed, they did study unidentified aerial phenomena. So it's like somehow or other it's being... The story is being pushed, let's put it that way. And, of course, there's a long history of the elite media, you know, the New York Times, Washington Post, those kinds of high-level media, you know, who have been pretty much doing the bidding of the military and the government, you know, for decades. I just have to think that they're conveying a story that the military went out there for a reason I haven't a clue about.
Well, we're talking with MUFON State Director Maureen Morgan, and coming up we're going to ask her some more questions, her monthly meetup that she does in her area, and hopefully maybe she can share some sightings that she gets in Washington State. All that and more coming up on Strange Harbor.
You're listening to Strange Harbor. Ghosts, UFOs, aliens, Sasquatch, all things strange. Online at strangeharbor.net. Strange Harbor. Be strange.
Two, one. It's Strange Harbor, where we talk about the weird, and we have Maureen Morgan, State Director of MUFON, Washington State, on the phone with us. And, Bill, do you have any questions?
Yeah, I was wondering if you could tell us about any recent sightings or any recent investigations that might be interesting.
Recently there hasn't been a lot of sighting reports that really jump out. I mean, we've had a number of extraordinary sighting reports in the past that are intriguing. You know, I'm afraid if your listeners heard previous presentation at Ocean Shores or shows, they may have heard some of these. But we've had over the past since I have been involved with Washington MUFON for the past 5 years, we've had some extraordinary sightings. Including, a sighting of, and this, several of these are ones that I investigated, because I'm, and I bring them up because I'm most familiar with them, but in a, one where a long, I guess a long-range trucker who has been driving between Seattle and Surrey, B.C. for decades, reported seeing this huge chevron shape, basically like a big V, shaped object cruising down from north. He was going from Seattle back to Surrey, so he was headed on I-5 going north, and he begins to see through the windshield this big chevron-shaped or triangular-shaped object cruising down, going south over I-5 south. And he said he watched this thing through the windshield. He then opened the driver's passenger side, or the driver's window, stuck his head out, watched this thing as long as he could until it just disappeared, continuing to cruise down I-5. And then he did his research, and, you know, he looked into everything that could possibly have been the source of this huge craft cruising down I-5. And, of course, we get one report, and there must have been hundreds of people who saw this object.
Wow.
And, you know, it was closed as an unknown because there was just no way to explain it. It could have been something of ours, but you have to think, why would we be, and of course it's silent, you know, no emissions, had lights on each of the corners. But, you know, if it's ours, who would have the audacity of flying it down over I-5 south?
Right.
So that would be one really interesting case.
Yeah.
There was another interesting case that I investigated that was reported by a gentleman on Camano Island, which is over from Marysville.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, it's one of the islands north of Seattle. And he said he was out by I-5 waiting for the bus to go down into Seattle, and he saw this huge, either square or rectangular object hovering over the Cascades. And anyway, so he was probably about 40 miles from where this object would have been seen over the Cascades. So I asked him, you know, to hold up his cell phone and give me some idea how big it was in relationship to his cell phone held out at arm's length. And he said about half as big. You know, think about it. This object was 40 miles away, and it was still half as big as his cell phone. And then I asked him about his background. And he said, well, during the Vietnam War, he had been in intelligence and stationed on a ship in the Mediterranean as a UFO spotter. So being curious about this, I started poking around, and indeed, I found a chapter in an Air Force physics book that was used in the late 60s that indeed has a whole chapter on UFOs taking the history back 47,000 years. And then right after Project Blue Book, which ended in 69, then that chapter was removed. So again, I closed that case as an unknown because this gentleman very likely was a trained UFO spotter. Another case that's just happened a couple of years ago over by, say, Wenatchee, when a gentleman reported seeing a craft that looked like a huge, you remember the film cartridges that used to go in Instamatic cameras, where they'd have two round tubes on the end that was joined in the middle? So if anybody remembers Instamatic camera cartridges, this is what this object looked like, and it was huge, and it was hovering over the city of Wenatchee. And he said he stopped at a green light, got out of his car. 12 other cars stop behind them. Everybody gets out to look at this big object that looks like an Instamatic camera film cartridge. And then the object just goes wandering off to the north over, you know, the wilderness areas.
Wow.
And again, this was, you know, just how on earth do you... It was seen by at least a dozen witnesses. And, you know, we have no explanation for what they saw. Let's see. I mean, I could go on... I could bore your listeners to tears with some of these.
This isn't
really
boring. This is interesting.
Cases. I investigated the case just shortly after I became a field investigator. This goes back six, 6 years. This was like one of the first cases I was assigned, where a gentleman reported that back in 1978 he had been in the Vietnam War and was a rifleman. And then after the war, then in 1978, after the war, he was working at a drive-in theater and setting up the theater, everything for the evening's performance, when he sees this like powdery gray object up in the skies. And at first he thinks it must be a bird, and then it...
If you need to get that, we can wait.
Oh no, it's my... It's being taken by somebody else.
Oh, okay.
But anyway, then he starts watching this, and then he realizes that when it dematerializes and disappears through a beveled slit in the... Hey, why don't I repeat this, because you've got voices in the background.
No worries. Either way, we're good.
Okay, yeah, I'll repeat this, because otherwise you're going to get conversation in the background.
Okay.
We couldn't turn off. My home health care client was expecting a call, so we couldn't turn it off.
No worries.
But anyway, the gentleman was setting up the drive-in theater for the night's film showing and saw a powder gray object up in the sky that he first thought must be a big bird. And then as he watched it, he saw it dematerialize and disappear through a beveled slit in the sky.
Hmm.
And it's like he could see it go through the slit, and then the slit closed up behind it.
Whoa.
And I figure that as a state director, when we have new field investigators, you always assign a case like that because you've got them hooked for life. And that still, you know, is one of the best cases, one of the most interesting cases I ever investigated.
So, like, the slit in the sky was like, let's just say, hypothetically, it was like a little tear into another dimension, and it just kind of...
Well, who knows? But the thing is that... When he said it was beveled, it would suggest that maybe the slit went in. You know, whether the slit was beveled or the slit was somehow thick. But anyway, the object dematerialized, and as it dematerialized, it went through the slit, and then the slit closed up behind it. And then there was a report made just within the last year or two to the former Washington MUFON director from a pilot of a similar kind of sighting, where he saw an object go through a slit in the sky.
Wow.
So these are the sorts of things that grab your attention. But the thing that really intrigues me about UFO investigations is that I also interview experiencers, people who suspect they may have had a close encounter or contact.
Right.
Or an abduction. Or just put it all under close encounters. And so... I talk to most of the people who report some kind of anomalous phenomenon in Washington State are sent to me because I'm on MUFON's experiencer research team, and we're supposedly trained to work with people who've had these extraordinary, often very distressing experiences. So what I hear is just mind-blowing. You know, the personal experiences that people have. And often entities in their bedroom that leave them so terrorized that they go to bed with baseball bats and shotguns.
Wow.
And I just interviewed a lady last night who has become so terrorized that she goes to bed with a shotgun, because these experiences are not good. You know, whatever these beings are doing, and often they don't know what's happening to them. All they know is that they're in a constant state of terror. And often go to bed with night terrors. So talking to the experiencers is the most fascinating part of doing any kind of UFO investigation.
Bill?
I got nothing. I'm just fascinated by the things you say.
I know. It's just fun listening.
Just listening to you talk about it. So, you know, I'm not formulating questions or analyzing anything you say.
Well, I've been rattling on.
I'm just listening.
And again, you have to keep in mind that most of this is from me, Maureen Morgan, and not me as a Washington MUFON state director, because I have many opinions that are my opinions, and they are not reflective of They do not reflect the opinion of many of those within MUFON.
Right, right.
I very definitely have my own opinions.
Well, what do you think? So these people that have these terrifying experiences, are there people that report having positive experiences?
You know, the overall impression I have of having talked to many dozen of these people who have reported having these close encounters, be it missing time, be it abductions, be it entities in their bedroom, is that virtually to a person, they have impressed me as being very sincere and truthful. So what they're recounting, you know, whether it is the truth or not, we don't know, but they're recounting what they believe to be the truth.
Yes.
And it's and many of them, almost always, their experiences started when they were a small child and then continued up through maybe their teen years, early 20s, and then often diminish, and then for whatever reason, then suddenly we start getting them calling us in their, say, mid-50s to 60s with more accounts of recent happenings to them. So, but I have developed the opinion that if anybody's experiencing something in adulthood, it very likely began when they were children and they have simply forgotten it or were made to forget it.
Right.
Yeah, and then too, you have to keep in mind that that between MUFON's 120,000 sighting reports and the National UFO Reporting Center's 75,000 reports, you know, that's over 200,000 sighting reports. And what do we know about UFOs? Absolutely nothing. I mean, if you know, the deep state, the government, the military know something, they're certainly not talking about it. But in general, we don't know anything about UFOs after, and in many cases, having investigated thousands and thousands of reports. So in my opinion, that if we're going to find out what's going on, it's with the experiencers.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
yeah.
If there's truth to be gleaned anywhere, it's what's happening to these people. Like this person I interviewed last night, you know, who, again, is one of the many people I talk to who goes to bed with a shotgun. Because she's in this perpetual fear that these, and what she perceives to be as very negative entities, you know, are going to come back.
Could you kill them with a shotgun?
And often they have, and it's a rare day when they don't have some serious physical condition. You know, be it something like MS or lupus or rheumatoid arthritis, immune deficiency conditions. Many of them have report, you know, waking up in the morning and they have gouges out, or they're waking up, they wake up after being dropped on their bed and their pajamas are inside out, or they're not their pajamas. They report really strange things happening to them, or their jewelry being broken. It's sunburns.
Hmm.
So, and what I find is that often you have this undertone of and it's to me, it's very distressing, and it's the most important work that I do as a MUFON field, as a MUFON field investigator, is to be able to talk to people and assure them that they're not crazy and they're not alone, that there's an awful lot of other people out there experiencing the same kind of thing, and that you know, they're not crazy. Because
right.
Almost always the first words that come out of their mouth is, you're going to think I'm crazy.
Right.
And it really distresses me to hear that, because they've gone through, and many times their entire lives, thinking they must be crazy.
Mm-hmm.
But
yeah.
To be perfectly honest, I think a lot of them would prefer to be crazy than to face a reality that, well, maybe their experiences are true. I think I'd rather be medicated and deemed crazy than to have to acknowledge the fact that these my worst suspicions are true.
Yeah. Do the experiencers ever remember some of the things that that you know that go on that happen?
Yes. Often they will remember being on the craft. Excuse me. There's this little machine that keeps buzzing here. Anyway, a lot of could you repeat the question? Sorry about it.
It's okay. Do many of the experiencers like remember what happens or you know?
Yes.
The interactions.
Not all of them, but say the one that I talked to last night has some severe eye issues. In fact, some that are so that are very very rare and. Really puzzle her ophthalmologist because they don't know what the reason for that kind of unknown damage. But remembers being on the craft and having these insectoid-like beings hovering over her, and they seem to be especially intrigued with her eyes.
Hmm.
So yeah, we've had a number of experiencer reports where they believe that they have been taken on the craft. To be introduced to their children, mm-hmm. hybrid children.
Wow.
And when you get this story from nurses, you know, when you get this story from people who I would consider very credible,
mm-hmm.
And who I know personally, you know, you just can't discount it out of hand. And for the most part, you know, they're delighted to meet their children. And it's and many of the women have gynecological problems.
Mm-hmm.
You know, very early hysterectomies, you name it. I mean, just almost to a person, everyone who has reported that they have had, they believe that they have had fetuses removed, that they have been on the craft to be introduced to their children, things like that, have also had gynecological problems.
Wow.
So it's... you know, and whether there's a link there or not, who knows? And, you know, whether they're confabulating, because they do have this background of difficulties, gynecological difficulties, I don't know.
Right.
But, yeah, most of them don't remember what they've experienced on the craft other than these women who have been introduced to their children. For the most part, it's like whatever happened to them is like stored in cellular memory, which is why they would have night terrors or why they go to bed with shotguns, where they can't put their finger on what the problem is, but something is chronically terrorizing them.
Yeah. Man, that's got to be tough.
You better believe it'd have to be tough. You know, and particularly when you consider a lot of these people are in their 50, 60, 70 years of age. So when they were small, when they were younger, they lived in a time when no one could acknowledge this.
Right.
They couldn't tell, or if they told their parents about it, they were told that it was just a fantasy or, you know, just dreams. Forget about it.
Yeah.
Yeah, so for most of them, you know, until just recently, I'd say within, you know, the past 5 or 10 years, probably since Ancient Aliens, most people were afraid to bring it out. So many of the reports that we get are from people who are seniors, because they're now, for the first time, feeling that it's safe to come out and disclose what happened to them decades before.
Do you ever have younger people, experiencers, or does it seem like the abduction...
It just seems like there's a lot of them had experiences... A lot of them, it seems the vast majority that I have talked to are older, although mm-hmm. there are some that I know who are maybe in their 30s.
Mm-hmm.
But the vast majority are people whose experiences began in the 50s, 60s, 70s, and 80s who are just now talking about it. It was like there might have been a heyday of events that were happening back then that are now being reported. It just seems like... you know, whatever's happening isn't needed anymore.
Yeah, they got as many as they needed to.
They got whatever they needed, and now maybe it's just, you know, surveillance, just checking up on, you know, these people who were probably regarded as lab animals.
Right. Right.
You know, and there's a lot of controversy among those who deal with experiencers, in that, you know, there's this arm that believes that, you know, that for the most part these experiences are all positive. You know, people believe that, you know, they're part of a mission, you know, that it's for our enlightenment. It's it's a very, and they don't want them to stop. It's a very positive experience. My experience talking to these people has been exactly the opposite.
Right.
And, you know, I deal with, and it could very well be, too, that if somebody is simply filling out a questionnaire online, that they may gloss over the traumatic parts of the, you know, experience. Mm-hmm. But when they're on the phone talking to somebody, and, you know, I'm saying, and then how did that make you feel? And then what happened after that? You know, never trying to lead them on, but always trying to open a door.
Mm-hmm.
And then I think that's when a lot of the distress comes spilling out. You know, and I have talked to very, very few experiencers who regard what happened to them in a positive light.
Wow.
So why do you think these experiences...
Different views of what's going on, and I can just go by my experience, and I don't believe there's any way in which I'm leading them to conclude that it wasn't positive. I'm just listening to them talk, and what I'm hearing, you know, is just leaves me chilled. I very often, like last night, had to go. It was 10 o'clock at night, and I had to go down and pour myself a glass of wine because what I heard just, I mean, literally curled my toes, and it was not good.
Wow.
So why do you think these experiences are so terrifying?
For one thing, they're random. They're totally out of their control. And in the case last night, often they're suddenly left paralyzed, and they can feel, whether they can see, they'll definitely feel some presence in the room. And then they will black out, and the next morning they'll know something happened the night before, but they won't know what. So... a lot of it, and again, I suspect that even if their memories are wiped clean, that their bodies remember it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, their body, you know, so if probes had been done, if things had been done to their body, it remembers.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But their minds may not be.
Wow.
So, and again, you know, when you hear these stories of repeated stories of people going to bed with shotguns and baseball bats, and they may not even know what it was that is triggering this kind of defensive behavior. And this is going to bed. I mean, so it's not like they're going out on a dark street. They're in bed.
Right.
Something is triggering this fear. It's almost like a chronic residual terror of when they go to bed, they're vulnerable.
And they're supposed to be in the safety of their home.
Oh, no. That's where most of it although some happen in cars,
yeah.
Some will happen in the woods, some will happen in canoes, whatever. It seems like the vast majority is when they're in their home.
Wow.
So there's no, and then it doesn't matter where they're at. The phenomena will move with them.
Wow.
So it's like there is no safe place.
Right. That's scary right there.
It is indeed. And because it's so often random, it's nothing that you can, you know, you can simply, and you anticipate the next event that you know will come, but you don't know when. So, you know, and I keep thinking that, my God, if I went to bed never knowing, you know, if something frightening or terrorizing was going to happen to me, I don't know how I'd ever get to sleep.
Right.
So, you know, I don't know how these people cope.
Well, it's nice that they have someone to talk to or some place to go to at least unload what they have to say. I mean, you've been really gentle with what information you've shared. I mean, you haven't said anybody's name or, you know, specific details.
And,
but that's,
nor would I.
Right.
Because,
yeah. Right.
That would simply, that, you know, and then the other thing that I'm very aware of and very, I guess, distressed about isn't exactly the word, but maybe overly cautious about, is I'm pretty darn sure that, again, you know, we're going to learn nothing from these sightings.
Mm-hmm.
That anything that's going to be learned is going to be learned from these people who have direct experience with whatever's going on. And what do you suppose would be of interest to the military-industrial complex, the deep state, you know, the intelligence community?
Mm-hmm.
Those people have the answer. And every time they come out and talk to us, make a report, get on the phone, they're making themselves vulnerable.
Right.
And so I'm always concerned about even, you know, when we need to submit a report at the, you know, after we've investigated the case, putting in, for the most part, minimal information. So a lot of information goes into my filing cabinet, which is locked, but very little of it goes online.
Yeah.
Because I feel that, you know, these people are, they're being targeted, appear to be targeted by the others. What you don't want to have is them either be targeted by the powers that be, whoever they may be, or others who may have an interest. You know, corporations, who knows who
right.
may be have an interest in what these people know.
So I think I've had an experience. I want to talk about it. How do I get a hold of you?
Well, you can contact MUFON, and just get on. I mean, you can get online, and you can find that there are some support groups, some experiencer support groups. There's one in Seattle that a lady by the name of Marcy Clevens has every month, and she's an experiencer. I can't remember the name of the group, but anyway, if anybody looks up Marcy, M-A-R-C-I-E and K-L-E-V-E-N, and then F, and then Experiencer Group in Seattle, they should be able to come up with the information about her group. And then there's another one that's held down by Vancouver that's conducted by one of the field investigators from MUFON and somebody I work very closely with. And then I have a monthly, what I call the Olympic UFO group here up in Port Townsend where I live. And, we generally have a speaker. We have general topics of interest. But also there's always a safe place there for people to talk about their stories. And it's, we always make sure that if somebody new has a story to tell, there's the ones who have been coming that kind of embrace them, take them in the fold, and then let them know absolutely that it's safe to talk about it no matter what it is.
Right.
But other than that, you know, you can get on the MUFON online site
mm-hmm.
and bring up, you can either go on to get into their experiencer research team site and submit a questionnaire, whereupon your questionnaire, if you wish to talk to somebody, then your questionnaire will be assigned to one of their team members, and they would come to me here. And then it depends on what state you're in. So the ones in Washington State then come to me. And other than that, you can also submit a sighting report to MUFON
mm-hmm.
and indicate that you've had an experience. And then they're sent to, even though they're going into.
Okay.
So even though the reports are submitted to MUFON National, all the reports are then forwarded to the state where they occurred or where the person lives. Then they all come to me. Any
okay.
case that's submitted in the state of Washington that may involve an experiencer come to me. And when somebody submits a sighting report where they saw an object in the sky, and then the field investigator, when interviewing them, discerns that, well, they may be an experiencer. They, too, then are directed to me.
Okay.
You know, because we're very aware that, that the people who've experienced these kind of phenomena need to talk to somebody who's familiar with the phenomena and know how to work with them.
Right. And because I could...
trained interviewers.
Right. Trained listeners.
Trained listeners, that's right.
Yeah.
That's right. So, if any of your listeners, and boy, do we need people down in your area, down in the Grays Harbor area,
yeah.
Pacific County and whatever, if anybody down there is interested in becoming a field investigator, it's the most fun thing you will ever do in your life.
Yeah.
You know, to get a hold of me, just look up Washington MUFON, get in touch with me and say, hey, yeah, I'd like to find out more about this.
Okay. I don't have to make a commitment right away. I can just reach out and talk to you first?
Not. I mean, absolutely not. In fact, I'll go ahead and give you my MUFON email.
Okay.
And then anybody who wants to contact me directly, and that would be MUFON, MUFON.investigates@gmail.com.
Okay.
And then I get quite a few people who contact me directly and say, you know, they'd really like to get involved. So believe me, it's the most fun thing you will ever do, and you truly do get the kind of information you will never get from any other source.
And you need investigators in Grays Harbor and Pacific Counties.
Are you kidding? Yeah, that's an area where we get quite a few sightings reports. Not only sighting reports, but experiencer reports.
Oh, wow.
And we don't have anybody down there.
Right.
So, absolutely. And if anybody's interested in getting involved with MUFON or have an experience they would like to report, get in touch with me.
Okay.
And if you'd like to make a report, don't know how, I would certainly lead you through it. And if you have had an event and would like to talk about it, let me know.
How do I get to the Olympic UFO meetup?
Well, because it's in Port Townsend, it's somewhat restricted to the area. But I have people coming from like Port Angeles,
mm-hmm.
Seattle, you know, Bremerton, and you know, areas around here. But it would be a little far out of the way
mm-hmm.
for, say, Aberdeen or Grays Harbor.
Okay.
And that is a monthly meetup up here.
Mm-hmm.
If anybody was, send me an email
to
MUFON.investigates, and if you're up here or if you're interested in coming up here, let me know and
we
can figure it out. We are trying to hold more meetings down around your area,
mm-hmm.
but again, it's a long way from up here, and we just don't have that many people who can go down there and hold a meeting other than myself.
You know, I'll leave this part out of the interview, but
uh-huh.
I might have a way, much like we did with Daryl and you know, Skyping him in, but with multiple people, like let's say Marcy up in Seattle, you in Port uh-huh. Townsend, and to where we had like five or six people, you know, sitting in front of their computer, all streamed into one area, so you guys could still stay home or you know in your areas, but then we could get a gathering of people here.
Well, you know something? That's a nice thought, but I think people really need to talk to you.
Yeah?
To meet that presentation I did down in Raymond recently.
Right, right.
You know, the presentation goes on for maybe 45 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
I was, like, pinned in there.
Yeah?
For 2 hours afterwards. You know, where people sort of cluster around you.
Yeah.
And need
yeah.
to talk about their... They're not going to do this if it's on Skype.
I gotcha.
So, so there's certain things that... like an online Skyped in presenter can do at a regular meeting.
Mm-hmm.
Like at my meetings that I regularly hold every month up here in Port Townsend.
Right.
But when you're going into new areas where a lot of people have not had a chance to talk about their experiences, you really need to have people there.
Gotcha.
Oh, so, yeah. I think it was easily 2 hours that, I mean, I was pinned in there. And I was surrounded by people who all wanted to talk about their stories.
Wow, that is great. That is great. Well, thanks for taking the time to talk with us today.
Hey, listen, Johnny, if you would help me to arrange for a venue in mm-hmm. the Grays Harbor area, I will be glad to come down.
Okay. That's easy. That's
we'll
the easy part.
We'll down there and make sure that everybody knows that if, you know, whether it's a, you know, if they have anything to report, whether it's a UFO sighting or if they'd like to talk to somebody,
mm-hmm.
you know, that I'll be available there.
Okay. Well, we're going to let you off the hook now. Again, we appreciate you taking the time to talk with us today.
Yes, thank you very much. We really appreciate it.
And it's always a pleasure.
Okay, we'll talk to you soon, Maureen.
Thanks, Maureen.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
That was nice to talk to Maureen again.
It was very nice to talk to Maureen again.
I had something weird happen this morning.
What's that?
Well, it's not really not that weird, but I guess it's all... I don't know what you would call it. Maybe anecdotal evidence. I drive to work very early in the morning, like 3 o'clock, 3:15 in the morning, and there's not many cars going around. This one truck was going really slow for being the highway at 3 o'clock in the morning, because most people that are on the road are going like a bat out of heck. Because, you know, I mean, come on, it's really early in the morning. There's no other traffic. But this vehicle was going really slow, so I passed them. Shocker. But then, like, right not too far after I passed them, I got this really, really unpleasant smell in my truck. Now, you've driven that same road numerous times.
Yes.
Hundreds of times, if not thousands of times.
Yes. And you can, this morning on my way here.
And you can have, like, a dead deer on the side of the road that's been there for a couple days, and you'll see it, but you won't smell it.
Right.
You can drive over an already dead animal on the road or swerve around it or whatever, and you won't get that smell. But this smell filled the truck.
Wow.
For about 15 seconds, it was just really unpleasant, dead animal, gross smell. So my thinking, I'm almost thinking that that truck that I passed had a sighting, a road crossing sighting, and it was like kind of patrolling back and forth to see if they could see it again, but they were too scared because, you know, the thing's huge in the first place, and
right.
And so they don't want to go too slow, but they're interested in what they've seen. And then I got that smell, and that smell wasn't, I mean, they're... I'll go by again today and look around for dead animals, but I've passed by dead animals on that road, and you don't smell anything.
No, you don't smell anything from the animals.
Right, and most of the time, the highway patrol people, they come and scoop them up anyway after a while.
They get them pretty quick, yeah.
Right, the next few days, but even a fresh kill or a fresh death wouldn't have smelled like what I smelled.
No.
So I'm thinking maybe that there was one running around there.
It's a possibility.
But anyway, that's all I had for you.
That's good enough.
Well, that'll do it for this episode of Strange Harbor. If you want to contact us, share any experiences you've had, or yell at Bill for his new age hooey, just log on to strangeharbor.net.
And stay strange.